York, New York, the big apple. New York, New York, the big apple. New York, New York, the big 16 million feet. Nationals, Tom McCann's, floor shine, stepping on each other, rejoicing over the death of one nigga toe. Cold, callous feet trotting up and down synthetic avenues, streets and gardens. Gardens that grow shit. Gardens where putty-faced beings sit emotionlessly admiring bastard flowers. New York, New York. A prerequisite to America, a disguised sin, where some brother from that closed southern shit comes to some open northern shit for a vacation. For an opportunity. An opportunity that knocks up sisters and knocks them in the head. For an opportunity that takes him home with dope in the arm and Clairol on the brain. New York, New York.
Back to the core.
New York, New York. New sameness, new food, same shit. New car, same gas without platformate. New love, same neurosis. New installation, same hoes. New hairdos, same minds. New style, same influence. New York, New York, the big apple.
Yes, that is the hands with all the grass. That's the last poets in the background. And this is are you there? Kill Radio. New York, New York. Can you guys hear me? Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay. Anyway, this is Kill Radio, and that's the last poets in the background. And yeah, the last poets from my youth, the original godfather of rap. I think those guys are still around. I think one of them passed away, but they're still in New York, and they're having readings. But see, today this is the 6 p.m. Friday news. And we have some interesting things. I'm starting off with the last poets. What we're going to go into next is an interview that I blatantly stole off of another local LA radio station, because I do stuff like that. It's a great interview with my brother Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys. And we'll hear that in its entirety. We gave you a little teaser last Saturday on this, on the show Talk Is Cheap. Pagello is still around. He's up in the Bay Area, and he's talking a lot of interesting stuff. And then after that, I'm going to read an article from the LA Times about Schwarzenegger, and I got some jazz I'm going to play, and it'll be a nice hour. And so again, this is the Kill Radio 6 p.m. news. Let's go back into the last poets. Let's go back into the last poets, and then we're going to go into this interview with Jello Biafra on Kill Radio 6 p.m. news.
Your ass jumping through it. New York, New York, the big apple. Siren sounds through the streets, putting your mind in a state of mental paralysis. New York, New York. New York is a Brogan boot-shaped state of Madison Avenue, Negro button-downs. Hungry lost nigga soul screaming downtown for death. Semi-black, obscured blackness, plastic trees, and phony grass. New York is a state.
Now, I know a lot of you know who Jello Biafra is. You've been following him since, well, the 1970s. After all, he did run for the mayor of San Francisco in 1979 against Dianne Feinstein. And his platform was to hold auctions for public office. Good idea. And to ban cars all across San Francisco, as well as to force politicians to wear clown suits. Which we kind of like that idea a lot, don't we? He's also the former Dead Kennedys lead singer, and that's where you know him mostly from, and the Green Party political revolutionary that he is. An exciting, an exquisite, a brilliant genius, a savant, I shouldn't say that, because he's overt, and a one great friend to most of humanity. Let's say hi to Jello Biafra. Welcome to Harrison on the Edge.
Hi.
A treat to have you on. Now, you're a guy whose spoken word albums are just as compelling as anything could ever be. And you get to actually say what most people think, and they haven't even articulated it into words yet, and have really this cool following. So here you are, Green Party political revolutionary, a guy who knows what's going on, and you're on a progressive station. Whoever thought in our lifetime a commercial progressive station would exist?
Oh, I think many of them have existed over time, but slowly but surely they get bought out. Of course, one of the ones that put San Francisco's music and the culture that sprang out of that on the map ages ago was KSAN, KFAN up here. And then the owners one fine day decided to switch it to a country station. And I'd love to find out what happened to all the live concert tapes of bands from ranging from the Jefferson Airplane era up to the Ramones. I wonder what happened to all of that stuff. I mean, there was a lot more of this, as you know, before all the clear channelization and Fox News dumbdown of what passes for information today.
Well, one of the things that has been your repeated cry on your spoken word albums is don't hate the media, become the media.
Yeah.
And that is such, it's just so smart, because that's one of the things we get to do, particularly with this kind of talk radio, is actually use it as a tool rather than use it as just a ventilation tube. And it does make a lot of sense. Now, when you were lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, did you, were you always politically motivated, or did it evolve as you watched the world evolve or devolve?
Well, both. I mean, I've been a kind of a news junkie since I was a small child. I saw Oswald get shot live in my parents' living room when I was five. And unlike a lot of parents today, my parents chose not to shield me from what was going on around us. You know, if we were watching the news and race riots came on or the bloody wounded troops in Vietnam, they would explain it to me rather than just change the channel so as not to upset the kids. So I was as engaged maybe as most as any child could be throughout the 60s as well as the 70s, even though I was quite small and wasn't able to really jump in until the mid-70s, and then there was nothing to jump into until punk rock happened. And then, of course, things got much darker politically, and without the music, who knows whether a lot of us would have survived. I mean, punk and then all the other things that inspired in the underground in the 1980s was the only thing that made the 80s bearable.
We're talking to former Dead Kennedys lead singer Jello Biafra here on Harrison on the Edge. He's also a Green Party political revolutionary, and you were strong in the Green Party. These days, the Nader-fied group is just seen as a spoiler. Do you think the party can be saved?
Well, saved from what? the
yep.
Greens won more local offices in 2004 than ever before. Brick by brick, the Green Party is growing, and I think slowly but surely the Democrats are handing us more and more members because they refuse to do their job. I mean, I remember there was a time when there really were differences between the Democratic and Republican Party, and you know, there had been, and even the news media took journalism seriously, but the differences between the parties began to blur, not just around the time of Clinton, but around the time of Jimmy Carter, who helped push the party rightward. I mean, he's been an exemplary former president, but he did start the initial movement, you know, no more George McGoverns ever again. So I think it's a smaller version of what happened after the religious right had Pat Robertson run for president in, what was it, 1988, and obviously he didn't get the nomination, although we might have been better off if Daddy Bush got it. But anyway, the religious right learned from that to work brick by brick from the ground up, and that's what we're doing very slowly, but there's a lot more obstacles against us, lack of wealthy benefactors and lack of access to commercial media and lack of morals might be part
yes,
of it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we now know that President George W. Bush is sort of the de facto head of the Christian Coalition right out of the Oval Office, as well as a lot of other monkey shines going there. We're talking to Jello Biafra. He's the former Dead Kennedys lead singer, Green Party political revolutionary, humorist, a brilliant talent, has so many spoken word albums, travels around, just an all-around cool, good guy. We're going to continue. We'll also take some of your calls at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Harrison with you, live and local.
You own the phone lines with Harrison. Call now.
877-520-1150.
When I heard your show, I actually peed my pants laughing on the 405.
Cab drivers had it on, and they were big fans of yours, so just to let you know, the yellow taxi population.
Hey, Harrison, I was listening to your show last week on Saturday, and so I missed, like, the first 15 minutes of the movie. I'm out, like, $12, so I was wondering if, you know, maybe you just mail me the check.
You're the most despised on my list. And believe me when I tell you I'm making a list.
Dude, you're the hippest thing on AM radio.
Message marked urgent.
Baggett.
Hello, Harrison. I just want to let you know you're absolutely the best thing I've heard on radio or TV in my life. Wonderful. Keep up the good work.
I'm a 50-year-old black male, closeted bisexual, cross-country truck driver who is an extraterrestrial in a human body. I have made the dedication to be true to myself.
Harrison, on the edge.
I know.
Their relentless reporting of the facts makes him look bad.
Yeah.
Stephanie Miller.
Look at the straight pushes for it. It's popular.
Oh, please, Bob, my house is set it on fire.
Monday morning.
Price worth it.
It is worth it.
Who did he say that?
As the Iraqis stand up, we will stand down. There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you.
By Jove.
If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Wow! What a way with words!
The war reached our shores on September the 11th. After September the 11th, on September the 11th, the lessons of September the 11th.
Original!
Fresh!
Nation. African American men and women. Thank you for listening. My proposal doesn't merely drop the developing world, it helps stop human liberty across national borders.
God, I pray that continue to bless.
Truths of Sinai.
A loving God.
The gift from the Almighty. In His image. The Sermon on the Mount.
My own prayer. May He guide us now. May God bless you all.
Harrison, on the edge.
Great track from the Dead Kennedys. Jello Biafra, our guest here on Harrison on the Edge on LA's Progressive Talk, AM 1150. Our number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. You'll know Jello Biafra as...
I thought you said you were a non-commercial station.
No,
I hear these ads for Home Despot and, the only dry cat food allowed to be called Fancy Feast. And then, of course, the Traffic Jam Report. And, of course, you wouldn't have to have so many Traffic Jam Reports if there were a few less, little bit less traffic on the road, which there used to be in the first half of the 20th century when L.A. had a kick-ass light rail system, which you may or may not know about. And then somebody got the bright idea, oh, wait, it works so well, let's privatize it. And they handed it over to a consortium of, what was it, Phillips or Mobil Petroleum, General Motors?
Yeah, General Motors.
Tires,
they bought up the damn things.
Ran the whole thing, deliberately bankrupted into the ground, tear up the tracks, and now you have the perpetually gridlocked smog pit of morons that so much of Los Angeles is today.
Well, you know, you're back, honey. We were just wondering, we thought you were a little quiet there, and I said, no, whoever thought we'd have a commercial station like this with 50,000 watts pounding across Southern California, it's like a miracle.
Fight capitalism, buy Home Despot.
Jello, one of the things that's very cool is this whole notion of when you were running for mayor of San Francisco some years ago against Dianne Feinstein, and you thought that politicians really ought to be wearing clown costumes.
That wasn't quite what I said. It was actually a reaction to what Feinstein was saying, how we were going to clean up Market Street, the main downtown thoroughfare of San Francisco, and of course she meant a low-income area that's neglected to this day called the Tenderloin, but I thought, hey, what's down on the other end, headquarters of Chevron Oil, Bechtel, Bank of America's kind of nearby. That's the end of Market Street that needs to be cleaned up, especially now
So why not make businessmen wear clown suits between the hours of 9 to 5? And it wasn't public offices I wanted to auction off. I wanted to have a board of bribery to set fair and standard rates for liquor licenses and building code exemptions, police protection, protection from the police, which was a big issue when Feinstein was mayor. A lot of police violence, especially against punk rockers, among other things. There weren't even that many of us then, but a lot of that going on. So that was where that came from. Another part of the platform back then that I still think was a very practical idea, and it just popped into my head, is, and this would be especially good for reforming the LAPD, let alone Signal Hill, is to have police officers elected. 4-year term, elective office, voted on by the people you patrol, meaning you'd not only
you'd have to know them, wouldn't you?
Could live in the hood, you'd have to live in the district, and you'd have to know your people.
So we would know the guy walking his beat.
And it would mean a hell of a lot more.
And if he beat you, you'd know he was walking.
Actually, when there was that kind of trust restored, they didn't all hide in their cars unless they came out and shot somebody or beat the crap out of them for driving while black or something.
Oh, you mean like on a regular Tuesday night?
Is it that night or is it Wednesday?
It moves.
Thursday?
Now, there is, of course, a quiet movement, but it's bubbling. It's moving up. And that would be to see Jello Biafra for president. This is not, of course, impossible, is it?
I wouldn't call it likely, and I wouldn't call it something I really have in mind. I mean, if from time to time, of course, I think, well, God, if I was in the president's shoes or the governor's shoes or the mayor's or whoever's shoes, what would I do in this situation? And that's what I encourage people in my shows to start thinking about, is not just what we don't want, but what we do want, and start asking yourself, okay, if I was in charge of this situation, what would I do? What would I do if I was in charge of this workplace? I hate being at things like that. It doesn't mean you'll find magic answers every time, but it can't help but make you smarter, because if the corporate world order does collapse in our lifetime as unexpectedly as communism did in the Eastern Bloc and the old so-called evil empire, somebody better be ready to fill in the void before the armchair Schwarzeneggers and people with rifle racks and Confederate flags and the pickup truck or Lincoln Navigators who will do anything to cut somebody off to get 20 yards ahead in a freeway jam start taking things over instead. I mean, we at least, even though those countries aren't perfect today, at least in places like the Czech Republic or South Africa, the hardcore frontline radical opposition had some idea of what they did want to do and who might know, have the knowledge to help run this part of the apparatus to keep the machinery from falling apart as badly as it did in places like Romania or Iraq.
Right. Well, you know, we seem to have such a volume of sheer nitwittery, of buffoonery, of mountebankery, of limited information, the ebb and flow of information, of data via the internet, you know, at least at first glance, is going to be where to buy, you know, your best maxi pad or, as you say, a new car, as opposed to what's really going on. And so it's hide and seek here. You know, I look at my mother as the best litmus paper for it.
Let's go back to become the media concept. That's what I'm trying to encourage other people to break through and not rely on talk radio or Jello Biafra to do it for them. You know, part of becoming the media means not just supporting independent and underground media zines, exchanging information on the internet and hopefully trying to find out if it's true first, also becoming the media means going one-on-one with people you know at home, school, work, family, whatever, and if they start spouting the usual Rush Limbaugh BS or Schwarzenegger's new anti-immigrant KKK without the white hood on lingo and all, don't just tune them out as being stupid or rednecks or unreachable. Sit down and talk to them. You know, point out that not being able to put food on the table is not the fault of brown people coming across our southern borders. It's the fault of wealthy people and corporations sucking away our money from above. And every time we buy any of their products or vote one of their puppets in or don't vote at all and allow their puppets to get in anyway, we are their serfs. I mean, I think insurrection is not just in the streets, which is great fun. believe me. And but I also believe in insurrection in the voting booth and insurrection with the wallet. You know, don't just boycott the obvious, notorious targets like, you know, McDonald's, Domino's, Coors Beer, Walmart, etc., but just start taking a long look at, you know, how much of your dollar is going towards products made by multinational corporate predators and see how many you can cut out. And after a while, this can be like drugs or tattoos. The more you do it, the more you want to go further. I haven't eaten at McDonald's in over 25 years, and I haven't suffered. I've rather enjoyed it.
And you probably have a nice lean waist, too.
Didn't like anything about them, so I thought, wait a minute. If I don't want to eat at McDonald's, then why should I go to Burger King? And for that matter, I've never been to Wendy's, but do I ever really need to go to Wendy's? Well, their toilets come in handy, but otherwise, no Wendy's, none of that. You know, the dominoes start falling down, and some of it is easy. What would you rather have, good microbrew beer or bad commercial American beer, where basically Miller tastes like slightly carbonated water, and I don't know, just for me, I often wondered why every time I even take a sip of an Anheuser-Busch product, I start to get a migraine after a while. So I just thought, I don't need to drink this. I don't like the taste of it. I ain't buying it no more. I mean, another great target to boycott because of where they put their money, of course, is tobacco.
Well, that's an easy one.
Your breath might not even stink so bad during sex.
Right, or your tongue fall out.
Or your what?
Your tongue fallout from, you know, oral cancer. We're talking to Jello Biafra. He's the former Dead Kennedys lead singer. He's spoken word albums. You can go to his website, which is alternativetentacles.com, and get a bunch of information on him. Of course, you can go cruise our website and get even more. GoHarrison.com, one word, GoHarrison.com. And check it out. I want to thank you, Jello, so much for having joined us on Harrison on the Edge on AM 1150. And are you going to be in L.A. soon?
Hopefully, and it'll probably be doing music rather than spoken word this time. I mean, the last spoken word album was a while ago. That was Machine Gun and the Clown's Hand. And then I started working with a band based in Los Angeles called the Melvins, and we made an album together called Never Breathe What You Can't See, which it sort of puts a lot of the wimpy, skinny tie pop punk and hair metal in its place, believe you me.
All right, hey,
don't worship the devil. Worship us. And there's a follow-up to that with the rest of the songs from that session, plus some remixes and an update of California Uber Alice featuring your friend and mine, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And we love it.
That one's called Sieg Howdy, and that album's coming out in September. So hopefully we can finally nail down a SoCal date or two or three.
Well, we'll make sure to get that word out, and we'll make sure that we keep in touch with you. And we want to thank you so much. Jello Biafra here on Harrison on the Edge on AM 1150, where it is always live and local,
absorbent and non-staining. Harrison on the Edge on LA's.
Oh, let's see. Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to that article, to that interview with Jello Biafra. Let's go into some more of the last poets. I'm sorry, I should have had that queued up. And this is the Kill Radio 6 p.m. news. Here comes the last poets.
Nationals, Tom McCann's, Floor Shine, stepping on each other, rejoicing over the death of one nigga toe. Cold, callous feet trotting up and down synthetic avenues, streets and gardens. Gardens that grow shit. Gardens where putty-faced beings sit emotionlessly admiring bastard flowers. New York, New York. A prerequisite to America, a disguised sin, where some brother from that closed southern shit comes to some open northern shit for a vacation. For an opportunity that knocks up sisters and knocks them in the head. For an opportunity that takes him home with dope in the arm and Clairol on the brain. New York, New York. New York, New York. New sameness, new food, same shit. New car, same gas without platformate. New love, same neurosis. New installation, same hoes. New hairdo, same minds. New style, same influence. New York, New York, the Big Apple. Where jive madam farmers are running around, shaking hands with all the grassroots people, never getting choked by the grass. New York, New York. Where Queen Liberty, tin shit is standing in the middle of pea green water, telling her brother he's liberated.
Statue of Liberty is a prostitute.
Yeah, he is liberated from the old Mississippi to the new Mississippi. New York, New York, the big. Where freak-looking filthy white rodents are running around, spreading new kinds of venereal diseases, talking about we love everybody. We love everybody. New York, New York. Watching movies marked adults only when it should be for kids only. The A train, the D train, the F train, that underground undercurrent, steel-plated frame, unworkable air vents, ass-aching bitches, and then there's that corny paraphernalia all over the interior. Inside of this, there's a brother being soaked in by that shit on the wall, suffocating from bad breath in the air, in pain cause some white jackass is riding on his foot. New York, New York, the big ass.
Let's see, that's the last poet's in the background, and they can be a little verbal, you know. They were the original rappers. These kids nowadays should listen to the last poets. They were the original. They were the godfathers of rap. Back in the when I used to play them in high school, my mother would tell me, "Turn the stereo down." So that's, I'm dating myself. That's when they came out, when I was in high school. So let's see, and that was in the early 70s. So, you know, real quick, I'm just going to play about 10 minutes of this great interview I did with my grandmother. I don't want to bore you too much with my family stuff, but it's, you know, my grandmother was the grandchild of slaves, and I managed to interview her a couple years before she died. She had all her wits about her. She wasn't too good physically, but she had all her mind, and she was like 91 when she died. So, you know, just hear a little bit of this. I might play the whole thing. If we got enough time. If not, I'll play the rest of it next Friday on the news. So this is my grandmother, Elizabeth Strotter, talking about coming down from, like, the northwestern area of Pennsylvania into Pittsburgh in the at the turn of the last century. And Pittsburgh is where I was born, Pennsylvania. And this is on my mother's side of the family, which is mixed in with a lot of, like, blacks who married Native Americans. And it's interesting, the woman you're here talking, her grandfather was a white man who was involved in bringing slaves up on the Underground Railroad. He would have been my great-great-grandfather. I actually wrote a script about this whole situation based on this interview. Okay, so I'm going to quit yakking and go into it. And this is an interview with Grandma Strotter. That's what I used to call her. Let me see. I don't know why it isn't coming up here. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, here we go.
Great grandfather worked with the Underground Railroad.
With my my grandfather.
With your grandfather?
Sure, that would be my grandfather, my father's father.
And he was a white man.
Mm-hmm.
Who married a slave.
Yeah.
So your father's father?
Yeah. And see, that would be my grandfather.
Yeah. You don't have no picture there of him, right?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
And I don't remember ever seeing him, but I've heard of him, you know.
Yeah.
Talked about him.
I'm sorry, I keep asking you this. Your father's father. Your father's grandfather.
No, my father's father.
Your father's father. Oh,
yeah.
He was the one with the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So then that would be my...
great-grandfather.
That's not too long ago then. But they never talked about what he did down south?
No.
He just worked with the Underground Railroad, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe he never went down south. Maybe he was a northerner and he stayed up north.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to help the slaves.
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear him talk about his wife?
Sure, certainly.
What would they say about her?
She was black. I don't know whether she'd had a hard time or not. I don't remember that.
But she was a slave.
Mm-hmm. But she'd been a slave.
Yeah. And he lived in Mount Pleasant.
No, he lived in Blairsville.
The one who worked with the Underground Railroad, he lived in Blairsville.
That was in Blairsville.
So then, his son with your grandfather.
My father.
His son with your father?
It was my father, yes.
So he was just your grandfather then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you never saw him?
I don't remember. I was young, I guess, and I just don't remember.
Where is he buried at?
Blairsville.
Do you remember his name?
Sure. Tom Patterson.
Tom Patterson? That's
yeah.
Well, did he have any brothers or sisters?
I don't know that.
Yeah. Okay, now, if he died in Blairsville, how come, did he spend any time in Mount Pleasant?
No, my father went to Mount Pleasant to work, see, after he grew up in Blairsville.
Yeah.
Went to work for the coal mines.
In Mount Pleasant?
Mm-hmm, in Mount Pleasant.
Uh-huh. Well, Grandma, so you say Tom Patterson's buried in Blairsville, huh?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, Aunt Celia's up there, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
That's on Granddaddy's side of the family.
Remember Mom?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, those are all on Granddaddy's side of the family.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me put this back into my house. Well, Grandma, how old were you when you left Mom Pleasant?
I guess 5 or 6.
5 or 6?
Mm-hmm.
That's when you came to Blairsville?
Yeah.
And you
No,
said,
no. Mm-mm. Come down to the north side, Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. North side, Pittsburgh. See, that's where my grandmother's... that's where they lived.
This is your grandmother on your mother's side?
Yes, on my mother's side. Mm-hmm.
But Tom Patterson was your grandfather on your father's side. Now I see.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
And you stayed in Pittsburgh until you were how old?
About 10. Then we moved to Sewickley. My mother and father and family. To Sewickley. And then while we was down there, my mother passed.
In Sewickley?
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
Where is she buried at now?
She's down in Sewickley.
What was her name?
Johanna.
Johanna what?
Patterson.
Johanna Patterson?
Mm-hmm.
Did she die from the same sickness that your sisters died from?
Well, yeah, they all had pneumonia.
Pneumonia?
Mm-hmm.
And your father died down there too?
No. He died in McKeesport or somewhere up around here.
Where's he buried at?
I don't know just where, but he was out in McKeesport or Homestead or one of those places.
And then you left and went to Blairsville?
Uh-huh, my aunt Frances, she had 2 children of her own. So she sent me to Blairsville to another aunt.
Uh-huh. And you were about, what, 18 then?
No, 14. 13, 14.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that means that your father died like when you were between the ages of like 11 and...
No, he lived until he was about, I was about 20 or so.
Oh, he even after you went back
but
to...
But he never kept in touch with me or nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I knew he was living. Because I met somebody one time that had run into him.
Uh-huh. And, yeah. And if his father was Tom Patterson, his grandfather, his father was Tom Patterson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was he a fair-complected man?
Mm-hmm. Not too.
Okay, you guys, thanks for being so patient and being a part of my family. That is my grandmother, That's my grandmother talking in the background. She passed away in the early 80s. She must have been in her early 90s, and she remembered all that. And her grandfather worked in the Underground Railroad. For those of you that don't know it, the Underground Railroad was like a secret passage for slaves out of the South into the North. And the grandmother, the woman you heard talking about, grandmother, her grandfather was a white guy who brought slaves up. And he married one of the slaves. He married, and that was my great-great-grandmother. And in all these towns we were talking about, I guess if you're not from northwestern Pennsylvania, that they would mean nothing to you. But that's where all these towns are. Blairsville, the little town between Pittsburgh and Erie, PA, in Pennsylvania. It goes north and south. In the north, north and south. In the north, in the most western part of the state of Pennsylvania, Blairsville, Mount Pleasant. But the big city is Pittsburgh, where I was born. So anyway, let's go into some more of The Last Poets. I don't want to bore you with any more of my family, but I was really close to my grandmother, and I still love her and look forward to seeing her in another plane. And again, you guys say, what is Hassan smoking there? Anyway, this is Kill Radio News, 6 p.m. news, Friday. Every Friday I do the news here at Kill Radio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the Kill Radio News. What happened to The Last Poet? Where are they? Here they go. New York's Last Poet.
On the subway! I dug the man digging on me. But the dude was hung up in a mass of confusion as to who I was. He thought he was trying to see.
I didn't know that. I didn't try.
But you see, me knowing me, black, proud, and determined to be free, could plainly see my enemy. Yes, I know him. I once slaved for him, body and soul, and made him a pile of black gold. Off the sweat of my labor he stole. But his game is old. We broke in the metal hole. Things must change. There's no limit to our range. He can never understand the new black man. Let's long see us every day riding the subway. 8th Avenue, 7th Avenue, 6th Avenue, IND, BMT, IRT. He still hasn't dug me. Next stop, 125th Street.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution.
Okay, hey. Hello, everybody. Hassan, I'm back. Hope I'm not blowing your ears out. This chair is squeaking too much. Let me change chairs here in the studio. Hold on.
Niggas change their hair from black to red to blonde, and hope black hair and lips will change. Niggas kill other niggas just because one didn't receive the correct change. Niggas change from men to women, from women to men.
Okay, I think this chair is better. I want to read a quick story out of the LA Times before I leave. I go off the air at 7. Put the headset on here. I'm blowing you guys out. There's no engineer at Kill Radio. The DJ engineers his own show. Hold on, now my headsets are falling apart.
Right thighs. Right thighs. Niggas always going through bullshit change. But when it comes for real change, niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are actors. Niggas are actors. Niggas act like they're in a hurry to catch the first act of the great white hope. Niggas try to act like Malcolm. And when a white man doesn't react toward them like he did Malcolm, niggas want to act violently. Niggas act so cool and slick, causing white people to say, what makes you niggas act like that? Niggas act like you ain't never seen nobody act before. But when it comes to acting out revolution, niggas say, I can't dig in action. Niggas are scared of revolution.
Okay, I think I'm ready here. I want to read this article. That's The Last Poet in the background. Okay, this is from the Los Angeles. This is from the Los Angeles Times on Monday, July 11th, 2005. It's in the editorial section by a gentleman named George Skelton. it's sort of middle to the road article, but you know, you can only get so to the left in the LA Times, even though it's a lot more to the left now than it was about 10 years ago. And the title is called "Governor Has Work Cut Out for Him to Reverse Self-Inflicted Decline in Approval." Sacramento. It would be premature to write Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's It would be premature to write Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's political obituary, but he certainly has dug himself a deep grave, and it's arguable whether he can climb out. Consider, Schwarzenegger has lost a third of his only lofty job rating since January, and more voters now disapprove of his performance in office than approve, according to nonpartisan polls. He even loses hypocritical reelection matchups against two relatively unknown Democrats, State Treasurer Phil Angelides and Comptroller Steve Wesley. I have about as much interest in these matchup numbers as I do Tom Cruise's view on religion, says Schwarzenegger campaign manager. Campaign spokesman Todd Harris, noting it's awfully early to be handicapping races that won't conclude for 16 months. Harris's explanation for Schwarzenegger's popularity plunge is this: the governor said, when special interests try to push me around, I'm going to push back. Well, there's no question there has been a lot of pushing around by both sides, and we have the scars to prove it. Schwarzenegger has been far outspent by unions on TV ads, but those anti-Schwarzenegger ads featuring teachers, nurses, and firefighters seem to have found a receptive audience. This is just a death from a thousand cuts, all of them self-inflicted, says Democratic consultant Gary South, who was Governor Gray Davis's chief strategist. None of this had to happen. Here is my list of the most damaging self-inflicted wounds. Thinking that because of his Hollywood superstardom, he could defy the laws of political gravity, he could belittle people, girly men, losers, kick their butts, and not deface his image. He could ignore the Capitol and stage gimmicky rallies around the state without casting doubt on his performance as governor. He could sell anything, even a hastily considered, flawed reform agenda. Misunderstanding the American political system, we gripe about politicians, but inherently cherish the subtle checks and balances that results in colloquial branches of government. We want the executive and legislative branches to cooperate even while competing. We don't tolerate strongmen bullies, whether it's for real or an act. Degenerating into a polygamous political partisan, getting elected as a bipartisan conciliator, his party, after all, comprises only 35% of the California electorate. Bowing to the right wing on taxes, he initially had the credibility to sell anything, even a temporary tax hike that could have fixed the state's nagging budget deficit once and for all. That's what Governor Ronald Reagan did, and he never had to worry again about a deficit. Instead, Schwarzenegger placed the state billions more into hawk, was borrowing, and still hasn't made ends meet. He's gaining on it, but making enemies. Breaking his promise to schools under a negotiated deal he cut with the education lobby soon after taking office, Schwarzenegger promised schools their normal share of any increased tax revenue. Then he reneged, stiffing them $3 billion. He couldn't keep his word without breaking another promise not to raise taxes, implying to voters he wouldn't accept political money from special interests, then raking in more than Davis, the so-called pay-to-play governor, could have ever dreamed about. Since his election, Schwarzenegger has raised roughly $50 million, making this reformer look just like another money-grubbing pole. Picking the wrong enemies, teachers, nurses, cops, firefighters, and picking fights and picking fights over issues that intrigue Sacramento insiders but leave average voters cold, the budgeting processes, and political redistricting. Calling a November special election that voters don't want, polls show, and will cost state taxpayers at least $50 million. So what can Schwarzenegger do to recover and return to the good old days of cheers rather than jeers? For starters, cancel the special election, which stands to benefit only political operatives. This could be done by the legislature passing an urgency bill on a two-thirds majority vote, and the governor signing it, according to Schwarzenegger's legal secretary, Peter Siggins. But Siggins adds the governor isn't considering it. He should be. All his problems seem to relate to the special election, says Republican analyst Tony Quinn. For it to happen, he has to raise millions and millions of campaign dollars. Political consultants don't seem to understand how much the public finds incessant fundraising distasteful. Moreover, says Democratic consultant Bill Carrick, no politician is likely to benefit from a bitterly fought special election. In this case, you could end up with everybody a loser, Carrick says. Everybody banged up, polarization in the extreme. At the least, negotiate a bipartisan alternative package of reforms for the ballot. That would spare Schwarzenegger a bruising fight, all but a sure victory, and show he can still work with Democrats. Then focus on issues people care most about, like improving schools and unclogging traffic. Yes, traffic. Spend more time in the seat of state government. The Sacramento platform is much more important than Bakersfield or Folsom or Santa Ana, says veteran GOP strategist Ken Kashikadin. Those places are for a campaign mode. People don't see this as a campaign time. To get the job done, you stay in the Capitol and do it. Schwarzenegger can emerge from the political grave, but only if he changes direction. Again, this very well-written article was by George Skelton. He writes Mondays and Thursdays. You can reach him at george.skelton@latimes.com. George Skelton. And that was in the Los Angeles Times, July 11th, 2005. And, everybody who's worked with Schwarzenegger here in Hollywood, and I used to work in Hollywood, says he's a nice guy. And, he probably is. And I hate to say bad things about him because, I have a lot of respect from the family his wife comes from. I think they're basically decent people. Not Schwarzenegger's family, his wife's family, the Kennedys. But the thing is, Schwarzenegger has aligned himself with one of the most racist, draconian governments since Andrew Jackson. He's aligned himself with Bush. So I have, on that right there, I have no respect for Schwarzenegger. He has no business being the governor of California. I feel like, a cartoon character is running the state. So anyway, let's go into Clifford Brown, jazz man, trumpet player, Clifford Brown, and I'm going to try and find some more interesting things to play you. okay, let's see, where is Clifford Brown at? I know I loaded him up here on the CD player, and here he is right now.
letter to all the red states. Dear red states, we're ticked off at the way you've treated California, and we've decided we're leaving. We intend to form our own country, and we're taking the other blue states with us. In case you aren't aware, that includes Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and the Northeast. We believe this split will be beneficial to the nation, and especially to the people of the new country of New California. To sum it up briefly, you get Texas, Oklahoma, and all the slave states. We get stem cell research and the best beaches. We get Elliot Spitzer, you get Ken Lay. We get the Statue of Liberty, you get Opryland. We get Intel and Microsoft, you get WorldCom. We get Harvard, you get Ole Miss. We get 85% of America's venture capital and entrepreneurs, you get Alabama. We get 2/3 of the tax revenue, you get to make the red states pay for their fair share. Since our aggregate divorce rate is 22% lower than the Christian coalition's, we get a bunch of happy families. You get a bunch of single moms. Please be aware that Nuevo California will be pro-choice and anti-war, and we're going to want all our citizens back from Iraq at once. If you need people to fight, ask your evangelicals. They have kids they're apparently willing to send to their deaths for no purpose, and they don't care if you show pictures of their children's caskets coming home. We do wish you success in Iraq and hope that the WMDs turn up, but we're not willing to spend our resources in Bush's quagmire. Dear red states, with the blue states in hand, we will have firm control of 80% of the country's fresh water, more than 90% of the pineapple and lettuce, 92% of the nation's fresh fruit, 95% of America's quality wines. You can serve French wines at the high-tech industry. Most of the low U.S. sulfur coal. We have all living redwoods, sequoias, condors, all the Ivy and Seven Sister schools, plus Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Caltech, and MIT. Dear red states, with the red states, on the other hand, you will have to cope with 88% of all obese Americans and their projected health care costs, 90% of all U.S. mosquitoes, nearly 100% of all the tornadoes, 90% of the hurricanes, 99% of all Southern Baptists, virtually 100% of all televangelists, Rush Limbaugh, Bob Jones University, Clemson, and the University of Georgia. We get Hollywood and Yosemite, thank you. Additionally, 38% of those in the red states believe that Jonah was actually swallowed by a whale. 62% believe life is sacred, unless we're discussing the death penalty or gun laws. 44% say that evolution is only a theory. 53% say that Saddam was involved in 9/11. And 61% of you crazy bastards believe you're people with higher morals than we lefties. By the way, we're taking the good pot, too. You can have that dirt weed they grow in Mexico. Sincerely, author unknown in New California. I like it. I like this plan so much. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, if you remember, Texas was looking to secede from the Union. I think it's great. I don't know why nobody helped. If you in Texas somehow can hear this voice and you still feel that the Republic of Texas needs to secede, please, please help yourself and know that I'll sign any document that will further encourage and help that wanton act. If you need to leave the rest of us the hell alone, help yourself. I've been...
Okay, as we go out with Clifford Brown in the background on the 6 p.m. news, where else will you hear a news show like this? Okay, and I'm Hassan, and I'll be in Monday night to do my jazz show. I'll be in Monday night to do my jazz show, and then I'll be back next Friday for the 6 p.m. news. I don't think Jaime's coming on tonight, so we're going to have to put one of his old shows on. He has some family situations he has to deal with, but he'll be back next week. I think Jaime's wife is a little under the weather, and we're all sending out the best here from Kill Radio to Jenny. We all love you. And that's the following show with Jaime here on Xenophone. That's the show that comes on after this one. He will not be here tonight, so we're going to put on something else. But let's go back into Clifford Brown, who you hear in the background. And let's go back into Clifford Brown. And I think I'm going to play some Indian stuff. I was at an Indian restaurant last week with another Kill Radio DJ and they got a 50-cent box, and we got some really good cassettes. So I'll see you either next Monday or next Friday at 6 p.m. on the 6 p.m. news. Remember, Kill Radio just might save your life. Sorry for that. Let's go into some Indian music here on. I didn't know that was going on. Sorry. Clifford Brown is skipping. And here we go with a little Indian music. And where is my Indian music? It's not coming up. Here we go.
Thank you.